Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for another fun and fur-filled hour of Fervently Speaking, hosted by pet lifestyle and industry expert, top dog Eileen Proctor. Nationally renowned as America's Canine Connections Coach, the top dog has a knack of sniffing out and sharing information about products, services, activities, and news that improve the quality of life for pets and the people who love them, all in inimitably entertaining style. Whether it's dogs, cats, critters, you name it, the top dog has really got her paws on the pulse of America's pet-loving society. It's time to sit, stay, and pick up your ears for Fervently Speaking, and your host, top dog, Eileen Proctor.
And welcome, everybody, to Fervently Speaking. You know, if it's Wednesday, it's hump day, and if it's hump day, it's Fervently Speaking Day on Blog Talk Radio, the Boomer and the Babe Station. And this is our last show of 2011. Where has the time gone? Unbelievable. We're going to have a fabulous show today with a special guest, Wendy Faircloth, who is a dog trainer par excellence. We're going to hear a lot about the ways that we can bond with our pets, and it's one of the many resolutions that I'm recommending that we all make on behalf of our pets. You know, in America, in a Western culture, our annual New Year's celebrations are traditionally accompanied by these well-intentioned things called resolutions. And as humans, we historically do things like, I vow to lose weight. That's on the top of my list, by the way. Or stop smoking, or spend quality time with the family. But did you ever wonder what your dog's resolutions would be? I mean, seriously, take a look at your dog right now, because I know they're right there by you, wherever you are, and kind of think about what would your dog's New Year's resolution be. Maybe it's, yes, Mom, I'll stay out of the cat box and stop eating the Tootsie Rolls you've been putting there for me. Or maybe it's, yes, I will beg less at the table. I will not sit by the table and beg. One of the more difficult ones might be, I'll put my paw in your hand, not my snout in your crotch when meeting your friends. So, you know, things like that might be their resolutions. I was thinking about my canine kids, and for Cassie, it might be, I'll stop barking at the mailman every time he brings the mail. You know, that's important, Cassie, because darn it, sometimes he's bringing checks, not just bills, and I want to make sure that I get them, and if you scare him away, he's never, ever, ever going to bring those checks to me. So please, try to put that on the top of your resolution list. My border collie, Disney, she's ball obsessed, and I think maybe her resolution, well-intentioned as it may be, would be, I will share my toys with my sisters. But, you know, just like my vow to lose weight, my resolution, I think her resolution to share her ball will go the wayside as soon as that beautiful green binky ball of hers is involved. So, you know, nonetheless, resolutions are a huge part of our New Year's traditions, and regardless of what your pet's intentions are, there are some simple but important resolutions that you can make on behalf of your four-legged family members to help you both, you all and your family, have a happy and healthy year, 2012. So the first I'm going to recommend is to resolve to feed your dog a healthy diet. Not all pet foods are created equal, and not all of them are suitable for all dogs. For example, puppy formulations typically have higher levels of protein than would be needed or desired for senior dogs. Some dogs are allergic to chicken or beef, and therefore an increase in alternative protein sources like lamb or fish would be in order. Be sure that your pet gets an appropriate blend of high-quality protein and vegetables and fats and vitamins. Diets rich in antioxidants can reduce disease, inflammation, premature aging, and degeneration. And I'd like to remind you, I mentioned this a lot on the show at various topics, but human food is often too rich in fats or sugars. And as emotionally difficult as it may be, you may want to deposit those table scraps in the garbage pail, not your doggy disposal. There's a lot of different views on raw diets. I'm not here to discuss the pros or cons, But what I am here to tell you is that maybe it's time to take a look at what your pet is eating and modify it for 2012, because it could make a huge difference in their energy level, their coat, their skin, and their general demeanor. I think resolution number two, it's important to make sure that you resolve to reduce your pet's exposure to harmful substances. You know, we're all in the green age now, and we're a lot of us using more pet-friendly and earth-friendly type of cleaning agents and things like that. But there are toxins that are found in common fertilizers, pesticides, and those cleaning agents that are linked with increased incidences of pet cancers. Rather than using products with warning labels stating that they're unsafe for animals, seek out the increasing number of available green and environmentally and pet-friendly products. Number three, resolve to schedule regular visits to your veterinarian. Since illnesses that are caught early on are often treatable, regular exams and immunizations to protect your fur friends from diseases and maladies are your best weapon. Regular professional teeth cleaning will also help keep germs and bacteria in check, and it'll give your poochie pal consistently kissable breath and a pearly white smile. And I'm a huge advocate, but I am not necessarily somebody who practices brushing your dog's teeth on a regular basis, because massaging some doggy-safe toothpaste onto your dog's teeth will help with the bad breath, will help with keeping their teeth pearly white, and will keep their breath kissably sweet. But it's also a bonding opportunity for you to spend time with your pet, and I highly recommend that you do that, because it'll make those annual dentals a lot less difficult for them to go through. I would love for you to resolve, if you've not already done so, to spay or neuter and microchip your pet. Dog, cat, it does not matter. I think that those are things that we really need to make sure that we do. And if you're resolving at the beginning of the year to be the best possible pet parent, spaying and neutering and microchipping your pet is absolutely number one on your list. And finally, I'd like you to resolve to give your pet lots of exercise. Because insufficient exercise contributes to behavioral problems, including chewing and digging and hyperactivity and general unruliness. And a regular schedule of exercise can help prevent obesity and illness for both you and your dog. Just remember one of the things that I say on a fairly frequent basis. If your dog is overweight, you're probably not getting enough exercise. So on that line of making sure that you give your pets a lot of exercise, I'd also like to recommend the whole concept of making 2012 the year of your dog. Make your dog the best he or she can be, and help yourself in the process by creating a better relationship with your pet through trying a whole lot of different types of training. Training is a great bonding experience, and we have somebody here who is a huge advocate of it and a doggone awesome dog trainer to boot, and her name is Wendy Faircloth. Wendy is the training director at Paws Canine Academy at Villa La Paz, and she first learned that she had good training sense when she was working in a boot camp-like environment with kennel dogs at an upstate New York animal hospital. It was around that time that she also did search and rescue with her rescue German Shepherd through CNY Search and Rescue. And then she crossed the country to train service dogs for people with disabilities for Canine Companions for Independence in California. A lot of you know that as CCI. Okay, let's be real. The high cost of living and difficulty finding housing for her dog led her to Grand Rapids, Michigan. Boy, you ping-ponged all over the place, Wendy, where you worked for another nonprofit training service center, Paws with a Cause. And that's where she had the pleasure of learning from and working with some of the best trainers in the United States. She trained hundreds of dogs a year, ranging from seven-week-old puppies to fully trained dogs of 2 years and above. In addition, she was charged with teaching foster puppy raisers how to get their new little bundles of fur to be perfect canine citizens. And with that expectation came a whole lot of issues to problem solve. And she came here to Phoenix, Arizona, which is where my office is here, the studio from Fervently Speaking, where she is, again, the training director of Paws Canine Academy. She actually tells her parents, by the way, that she's finally using her Bachelor of Arts degree in education from Niagara University to teach people how to make their dogs all that they can be. Very good. Everybody out there wants to use that line, Wendy won't mind. She feels that teaching dogs how to learn is her specialty, and she acknowledges that her training techniques are just a bit different from traditional old-school methods. She likes to help dogs to develop problem-solving skills, build their motivation to work for their owners, and think about their actions. She's awesome at puppy training, behavioral and obedience training, service and therapy dog training, competition training, especially agility, disc, and flyball, which we're going to hear more about. And so, fervently speaking listeners, let's give it up, put the paws together for the director of training at Paws Canine Academy, Wendy Fairclough. Hey, Wendy, how are you?
Hey, how's it going?
It's going awesome. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know you'd rather be petting puppies and training puppies than sitting behind the microphone here, but we really appreciate your being here because your background proves that dogs are such an integral part of our lives that we need to make sure that we're coexisting peaceably.
Absolutely.
So do you believe that you are training dogs or are you training people? What's your philosophy?
Well, basically, I think I'm training the people to train their dogs because I don't live with their dogs. Their dogs go home with them. So basically, I'm training the people to work with their dogs because training dogs is a little bit different than, let's say, training kids.
Yeah, just slightly, right? I'd rather work with the dogs, just by the way. So when you're training people to work with their dogs, to train their dogs, it's really a group sport, isn't it, where everybody at the end turns out to be a winner.
Yeah, absolutely. The people win because they're building a bond with their dog, and the dogs win because they get out, they get to do stuff, and they get to get treats, frankly.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what the dogs live for, is for the reward. You know, I mean, it's great that they do all these wonderful things that we teach them to do or ask of them. But in the end, they want a treat. And a treat, let's be clear, does not have to be a huge biscuit. It could be a pat on the head. It could be a belly rub. It could be a piece of praise or something like that, right?
Yep. I think of rewards as paychecks. Dogs, we need paychecks to go do our jobs. I think dogs need paycheck to do its job too.
Yep, absolutely. Let's start from back off before you're even doing training. I think a lot of the reason that some dogs wind up in shelters or in the rescue world looking for their new homes is because they don't know what the expectation is in their home, and their parents haven't worked with them. They're not born knowing that sit means sit, stay means stay, and no means no.
Right.
So let's talk about that.
Well, when the dogs first come home, whether they're a puppy or they're an adult dog and you get it from rescue, you have to teach that dog the way of your household. And a lot of people bring the puppies in or bring the adult dogs in, unclip the leash, and just think that the dog is going to get it without being shown what to do. So I'm a firm believer, right from the get-go, even if it's a house-sitting dog that I have come in my house, there are rules, boundaries, and limitations when they come in. And there also is rewards for when they do the right thing. I don't always recognize when they do the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. That's generally what we do. We don't recognize a dog until they've done something wrong. They've stolen your sneaker, gotten into the garbage. And then we give them attention, negative attention. But they'll take the negative attention just for the fact of getting attention.
Right. Yep. And that's true with humans, too. We won't get into the psychology of all of that. But I know that, just for example, my pets are not allowed to come on the couch. That's just the rule. They are allowed on my bed, and please don't be shaking your head at me.
Yeah.
All right. No judgments here.
No, there are no judgments.
No judgments. But in my life, there is a distinction between coming up on the couch when there will be friends, relatives there, and being able to come up on the bed and cuddle with me when we're in our private time. Okay, so do dogs know that? I hope that the answer is yes, but do dogs know the difference between being able to get up on a bed and getting up on a couch? Can they be that specific?
They can be specific. You can segregate different parts of the house. They're not allowed in the kitchen, let's say. A lot of people don't want their dogs in the kitchen when they're making food, so they just make the kitchen off limits all the time.
Right.
They can go in everywhere else in the house, but they can't go into the kitchen.
Right. And other people may say, I don't really care if my dog or my cat jumps up on the counter and helps
right.
himself to the hors d'oeuvres that I'm preparing for you, okay? Yeah, everybody, 1, 2, 3 together. Ew. Yeah, but a lot of people have, so the set of rules, you said this just when you were starting, the set of rules for your home and your life is really what's important. And no dog entering your life, just like no partner or friend knows what the rules are unless you set them, you continue to reinforce them, and you reward the good behavior when the expectation is met.
Right.
Yeah, good. So we got that under control. Do you have anything else you wanted to say about that? Because I think I might have cut you off.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I even have, when I have friends' dogs come over, if they allow their dogs on the bed or on the couch, I can still, when they come over to my house, I set the boundaries. They can't get on the bed. They can't get on the couch.
Right.
So it can be environmental also. It just doesn't have to be within your own house. It could be different areas. They can do different things.
And so that comes up with the whole importance of the vocabulary that we set with them, meaning the word no, because they, when they come to your house, don't know your rule is different. And you may say, get off of the couch. I do not want you on the couch. Would you please get off the couch? And what they're hearing is, yada, 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 couch, yada, 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 couch, yada, 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 couch. So the words no, down, off, stay, sit, those are all very important for your dog to learn, as well as the specific rules of your domain.
Right. Dogs don't know English. We have to tell them what each individual word means. They don't open up a dictionary and say, sit. Oh, sit means put my bottom on the ground. They sit, and we tell them what it is that they're doing at that time. So
right.
They make that association.
Right. And that's very demonstrated by somebody who wants their dog to learn how to give paw. Some people say shake.
Right.
Some say give paw. Some say slap me five, whatever it
right.
is. What's the funniest thing you've ever heard somebody say when it comes to their dog giving paw? Have you heard some really weird things that people say?
Not necessarily with giving paw, but I hear a lot of crazy release words.
So a release word, explain what that is.
A release word is when you put your dog into a controlled position, like a sit or a down, you verbally release them. A lot of people use okay as their release word. I've had one lady use the word toes.
Toes.
Toes. That meant for her dog to get up from a position.
Okay, did you ever ask her why she used toes?
I laughed. Yeah, I did ask her, and she just said, why not?
Okay.
And I said, exactly. It's right. All what you tell your dog that word means.
Right.
To us, it's toes.
Right.
To the dog, it means
get up.
Get up.
Get up, right, exactly. And you could say Rumpelstiltskin for that
absolutely.
Matter.
You can
and,
call it
and
anything.
It really wouldn't matter. Is the shorter the word, the better, or is it just consistency being the key?
Consistency and repetition.
Right. I use the word free. Free, which in a way made me feel bad because it made me feel that my dog thinks she's a slave. But then I had to remember she doesn't know what that means.
Absolutely,
so,
yep.
Yeah, so my dogs are free and they love it. And we do things like sing the national anthem to them. Like, okay, so here you go, guys. This is one of the things that the top dog does. When my dogs are having their meals, they're not allowed to go and eat until I tell them that they can. So I have them lay down. So I say, what do good girls do? And they learned to lay down. And they sit there with those big brown eyes pleading at me, please, we're starving. You haven't fed me forever. I'm going to report you to the Humane Society. Oh, my God. When they've just probably eaten, you know, a few hours before. And they're sitting there and they're laying there and they know that their word is free. So I will sit there and I will say something like, wow, I really hate paying high prices. I really wish that the next time I went to the grocery, my food was free. And invariably, they know that, so they listen to the little games I play with them.
That's
and
fun.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's fun. Going, yeah, that's fun.
Not for us.
<It's> free, you know? But we do that. I also sing the national anthem to them, the land of the free, and they're just like, okay, stop singing, we're eating now. So, yeah, so the word and the consistency of the word is important.
Yes.
And to that end, can you have multiple words for the same action? For example, saying wait versus stay. I mean,
you can. It's bad dog training, but we all do it. I have different things that are called different, you know, like in agility. Let me think of an example. Oh, in agility, if sometimes I'll blurt out the wrong thing and call something the wrong thing, and they're still going to take that obstacle.
You mean the piece of apparatus
yeah.
that you're playing on? Yeah. Well, and part of it is them knowing that we are imperfect, and you know sometimes they like to make us not feel bad
right,
about
right.
that. So let's talk about the different types of training that there are that will help our dog understand what we expect and, just as importantly, as we talk about our resolution, bond with our pets. Let's talk about behavioral training.
Sure.
Okay. So give us some examples of behavioral training.
Well, behavioral training is, I think of it as basic obedience, where you're teaching your dogs the basics of self, a lot of this to do with self-control. You know, self-control on leash, self-control for instance, eating food, self-control going through doors, just general self-control stuff. And comprised in that is also working on the dog's recall, getting the dog to come to you when you call it. And, you know, opposite of that, or not opposite of that, right along with that goes competition obedience, which is in, it's a dog sport, say, and you compete with your dog and you're graded on the exactness of your down, the exactness of your position of your sit. There's retrieves involved in competition obedience. And people travel all over and compete with their dogs and get titles on them.
So who like, what would we look for if we had really well-behaved dogs? And I'm still working on mine now. I'm competitive, but I'm not stupid. My dogs will not be entering these contests. But what would somebody look up online if they were interested in competing with their dogs?
You would look up through the American Kennel Club competition.
AKC.
AKC.
Okay.
Competition obedience.
Okay, and that's for fun. I mean, you don't win any money, or you might get a trophy, or...
I don't compete in obedience, but I think mostly it's bragging rights.
Bragging, yeah.
I don't think there's any money to be made in really any of the dog sports.
Okay. Well, let's go back, because a lot of the people that are listening are still working on, yeah, I just want to, you know, have my dog win at home with me by sitting and staying and downing and all that sort. You said recall. I would imagine that there's an importance to recall beyond being able to say my dog knows how to come to me when I call. Let's talk about that. What's the importance of a recall command, a consistent one?
Well, the importance of a consistent recall is, I think, it's a safety issue. You know, if your dog accidentally, somebody leaves the front door open or the gate open and gets out, you would like to be able to call them back to you.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not going to go out into the street and potentially get hit by a car.
Yeah, good point. That's a good point. So I know that we are not able to see what you're talking about, but if you were able to explain a three-step process perhaps for recall or a four-step process, just very quickly.
Very quickly on a recall, probably one of the hardest things you're going to teach your dog to get a consistent recall. But the first thing you're going to need is a name response.
Mm-hmm.
If your dog's not going to respond to its name, it's probably not going to respond to a recall either.
Okay.
So teach it its name, and then reward the heck out of it. A dog will not come to you if there's no chance of any sort of paycheck or reward when it comes to you. So you have to build high value to that word.
Okay. High value to its name.
To its name and then the recall word, whichever word you choose to use as telling your dog to come to you.
Which, again, could become, hey, Rumpelstiltskin, here, whatever it is, as long as it's the same word each time.
You can use cookie if you want to.
Okay, yeah, even if it's a bribery thing, it doesn't really matter.
Well, you don't want to bribe your dog. I've had some friends' dogs who bribe their dogs, and they can spot a bribe from a mile away.
Ah.
Because you're not always going to have a bribe on you when you want to call your dog.
That's
your dog gets out the front door, you don't have a bribe on you, you're
right.
Out of luck.
So what's in it for the dog to listen for the recall then if they're not going to get something out of it? Would it be just good boy or good girl?
I use food and I use toys as my rewards for recall.
Mm-hmm.
And I practice all the time. I don't wait for, you know, an instance where I think my dog is going to not come to me.
That is absolutely a great point, because that's what we wind up doing is we wait until we need it and then we cross our fingers that the dog is going to listen. But it's about the consistency of us working with the dog before it ever needs to happen.
Yeah, you can't expect to get a recall if you've never worked it on your dog and not shown the dog exactly what that word means, which means come to me and touch me.
Right.
And that's what I teach the dogs, is come to me and touch me. and then there's it's reward-based.
Gotcha. And if the one time that there is a danger, you don't have that treat right with you, because I'm imagining, well, maybe you do carry treats with you every second, but they may be a little disappointed, but at least your dog is safe, and
absolutely.
And they'll get a word praise or something like that.
Yeah, because you're going to intermittently reinforce them.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to start off 100% of the time using treats.
Right.
And then intermittently, sometimes you're going to reward with treats and sometimes you're not. So my 10-year-old Border Collie, I still intermittently reinforce her to this day. You know, like I know that if she doesn't get a treat consistently for an extended period of time, that she's going to, the recall is going to become weaker.
Right.
So I go back, I work it, I reward her, and build that, well, I might get a reward.
Mm-hmm.
Let's chef try it out and see.
So understanding the importance of commands like sit, down, stay, heel, all that, it's one thing to be working privately in your home when there's no distractions.
Yes.
But then there's the real world out there, okay? A dog bolts out in the street, and there's a squirrel. Okay, and he goes after the squirrel. So that's another reason why we have to make sure that when we're doing this work with our pets, we do it with distractions at times. I guess that's where a training class might come in.
Yes, a training class is great. When people call me and they want to do in-home stuff, unless it's a behavior modification that I need to do in their home, I like them to come out of their environment.
Mm-hmm.
So the dog can work with those distractions of other dogs, other people, stuff
right.
like that.
Right. So let's talk about the bonding effect, because, again, we're going back to our New Year's resolution of spending more time with our pets, making it the year of a well-trained dog, and also the best relationship we've ever had with our pets. Let's talk about the bonding concept behind this behavioral training that you're referring to.
Well, I mean, you can't say enough about just doing something with your pet and, you know, working with them to build that bond. I'm not really sure.
I think that when I take my training classes, it's the commitment that I'm making to the dog. They learn to expect it. I mean, seriously, my dog, I call her a watchdog, even though she's not the least bit aggressive towards anybody to protect me. But, you know, it's like she knows the day of the week when we're going to go to training class.
Yeah.
And looks forward to it and comes to me. And I think it instills a loyalty and an expectation, like in any relationship, where we go and we're committing time to each other.
Yeah.
And just like rescue dogs know that they should be very thankful to their new parents, I think that a dog that spends a lot of time, a lot of quality time with their owner, also feels the same way. There is a bonding that happens that the next time you want something, I don't want to say that it's like a psychic nature, but you just sort of get to know how they stand, how they sit, how they feel, and vice versa. And allowances can be made. I don't know. Maybe I'm just crazy.
No, it's good. I still take classes with all of my dogs.
And you have other trainers that you go to learn?
I do. I go to other trainers. In fact, I just had my first puppy class, agility puppy class, with my little baby Whippet.
Okay, so wait, let's take a break for a second. I know that you've got quite the menagerie, and I don't know if you have anything other than dogs, but let's give a shout-out and let's let the audience know about the kids that share your life with you.
Well, I have 6 dogs. I don't like to admit it then.
That's below hoarder status, right. By the way. She's not a hoarder.
I have 6 dogs. I have 3 border collies, a border collie mix, and 2 whippets.
So she's not a hoarder, but she is a border hoarder. Okay.
Border, yeah.
Border hoarder, yeah.
Border collies.
Yeah, okay. So what's their names?
I have Madison, Frisco, Booster, Solomon, Secret, and Saranac.
Okay, and the border collies are
Frisco, Mad, and Secret.
Gotcha. And are all their personalities exactly the same just because they're border collies?
No.
They're not. They're different.
They are.
Yeah, I want to talk about that, so hold on. I'm making a note here. Okay. So, and then you've got 2 Whippets?
Whippets,
and they are?
Out of the hound group.
Okay. And their names?
Solomon and Saranac.
Okay, Solomon and Saranac. And then you've got Booster. What kind is he?
He's a border collie mix.
Border collie mix. Okay. Now, I got to be honest. I've known you for a while, and I don't think I've ever heard you call your dogs by their real names. For example, Saranac. You call Saranac?
Knick-knack.
Knick-knack, yeah. And?
Nikki New.
Nikki New. Okay, everybody make fun of the trainer here. And I've heard you call Secret a few names.
Secret's names are Cece.
Yeah.
Or Seaweed. Or
Seaweed.
Weed.
Okay.
Weed.
Okay, so let me ask you a question about that. You said it's important for them to know their names. So help me through this, because my dogs also have lots of names. I mean, I call my Kathy, my golden retriever, Miss Kiss, because she kisses a lot. Kiss Kistofferson. Don't ask me, it's a long story. I call her Puddin' Pop. I call her Sweet Potato. How do dogs learn their names when we're giving them all of these adorable distractions to who they really are?
They get all the nicknames. I wouldn't use a lot of the nicknames unless you use them a lot as your recall, mm-hmm. for your recall. But even the dogs that are in daycare, all the counselors give the daycare dogs nicknames, and they all know their nicknames as well as their real names.
Yeah. Yeah. That's okay. So we can have nicknames, but when it comes to the important things like recall, make sure you're using one of those and not say, hey, you, or
right.
doggy. You have to be very definite on what you're saying and who you're saying it to.
Yeah.
So they know that it's being directed at them.
I wouldn't call Kathy Puddin' Pop to get her to come to you.
Oh, she'd come to you if you called her Puddin' Pop?
I don't know.
Yeah.
She's a bird outside.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, she is a bird dog. She is a bird dog. All right, so we've got this behavioral training, and usually what age are dogs when they can start learning commands like sit, stay, down, heel, et cetera?
I start right away with my 8-week-old puppies when they come to me. I start right away teaching them stuff. I don't usually put a word to it because they're not performing the task readily yet. But as soon as they are, then I will call it something.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So if they do something consistently, you call it something, whatever it is.
I will tell them what it is they're doing, yes.
Okay, good. Just in terms of basic things, by the way, because a lot of people got puppies over the holidays, they are going to want to start doing puppy classes or training their puppies. What age is good for a puppy obedience class? When's too early? When's too late? And what do you recommend in terms of how your pet should be prepared for it?
Well, I usually will accept puppies into my class after they've had two or three shots.
Okay.
Which is usually between 12 and 14 weeks.
And that's to protect them, not to protect the other dogs.
Yes, that's mm-hmm. to protect them from, I don't even like taking the puppies out into park environments until they've had a few shots
mm-hmm.
under their belt.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so is there anything else that they need to have in terms of socialization skills, or will puppy classes normally include socialization skills?
Some puppy classes include the socialization part of it. The puppies with letting them play a little bit,
mm-hmm.
If they're appropriate.
And if they've had their shot.
Right,
yeah. So, I mean, I would alert you, and different trainers have different philosophies on this and different rules for their centers or their training classes, but I would make sure that you feel comfortable with what you're doing. I wouldn't bring my pet out anywhere unless it was up to date on its shots, whether it was a puppy or an adult. And, you know, I would make sure if my puppy wasn't feeling well, if it had any kind of bouts of diarrhea or coughing, I would keep it away from training until it absolutely felt better on a consistent basis. You don't want to infect other pets with anything.
Right.
Yeah. So, okay, I wanna jump to the next type of training, because you brought it up. You said you just had your first puppy agility class with Saranac?
Saranac.
With Saranac and with Knickknack, Paddywhack, give her dog a bone. And when you say a puppy agility class, we all, I think, have seen on Animal Planet, you know, the agility trials and super fast dogs whipping through the course. I mean, dogs know how to do that stuff immediately, right?
No.
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 Okay. People know how to do it immediately, right?
No.
No. Ah, bonding opportunity. Let's talk about sports training, and we might as well start with agility.
Sure.
Tell us, for anybody who may not have seen it, what's agility all about?
Agility is a course. Every course is different. Every time you go out there, it's a different course, and it's just a bunch of obstacles. There's a dog walk. There's an A-frame, tunnels, a tire, jumps, teeter-totter.
Okay, and they're all set up on a course,
mm-hmm.
and it's
numbered.
It's numbered, and it's your responsibility to lead your dog in order through the obstacles in the fastest amount of time ultimately.
Without faulting.
Without faulting, which means not...
Going off course.
Right, going off course, running away because your recall doesn't work.
Running away, knocking a bar.
Knocking a bar off a jump.
Yep.
Not hitting a yellow zone, as I understand it.
Not hitting the contact zone.
Okay. And so I would imagine that before anybody does agility, it is imperative to have solid behavioral commands down, sit, stay, come, down, and all that.
It helps. The For Fun Agility classes that I do would not necessarily don't need to have that.
Mm-hmm.
We work on it during class a little bit. But for any competition, obedience, absolutely a good start line stays imperative for sure.
Yeah, well, I've seen, in fact, I've taken the agility class, and I have found that it builds confidence both in the dog as well as in the owner. So let's talk about that. You've seen some great transformations from people doing this fun sport, this fun class, and 6 weeks later, they're totally new. So,
yeah, I mean, agility is definitely a confidence builder. My little Whippet, I'm not going to compete in agility with her, but it's a way for me to go out and work her little mind, get some control on her.
I'm not going to tell her you said she had a little mind, by the way. sorry, Whippet owners out there.
Sorry.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just for her to pay attention to me. I mean, she's a sight hound, and so ultimately, I want her to pay attention to me. And in agility, you need to have your dog pay attention to you so you can direct them through the course.
Right. And by the way, I've taken the beginner classes in agility, and I don't call things the right name, and I don't point the right way, and I'm looking opposite from where the dog is. So this is as much of a training and working our little minds as well as it is the dog's, right?
Yes. Agility is very difficult to handle for sure.
But if you start slow and you recognize it's about the experience and not the end result yet, you can go through a few agility classes and you can make those mistakes and your dog will laugh at you and you'll laugh at the dog and it'll just be a lot of fun.
It'll be fun, absolutely.
And it's also a very active type of training because it's not one of those things where you're standing there and saying, sit, stay, down. You're running the course along. It's not like you have a remote control that you plug into your dog that you know, maneuvers it. It's not a wee dog or anything like that where you've got a computer game. You're actually running that course with your dog.
Yes.
And I think with regard to bonding, there is, again, a respect that comes from the fact that, you know, that you're telling your dog what to do, and even if you're making a mistake, your dog is covering for you a lot of times.
Yes, they do cover for us.
I know that in your agility courses, you have all sorts of breeds of dogs, including mixed breeds. What's the funniest breed you've ever had do agility?
Probably the 120-pound St. Bernard that I had.
A St. Bernard?
St. Bernard.
Wow, was he good at it?
She had her moments. Tunnels weren't her favorite because she had to crawl through.
So the tunnels are always the same size.
Yeah, it's one size fits all.
Or doesn't, as the case may be. Right? Did she ever get stuck in the middle?
She did not get stuck, but sometimes she would just lay down in front of it and say, I'm not going through. And Mom was really cool. She would just move her on.
Right.
Like, okay, you don't want to do the tunnel. We'll move on to the apron.
Right.
How about that?
Right. Because it's not about domineering your dog. Dominating your dog. It's about having fun with your dog and having your dog have fun with you doing this. I know I once saw a pug doing agility, and that was really funny because they're a little rotund, and they snort, and so every time this dog exerted itself, we didn't know which end the sound was going to come out of, and that was fun to watch.
That was a lot of fun. It took a little bit of extra motivating for mm-hmm. him to do the course,
mm-hmm.
but he's a champ now. He runs all, I think he can do about 15 obstacles before he gets a reward now.
And how many obstacles could his mom do before she kind of peters out? Can she do it too?
She's getting up there.
There you go. So that dog's name is Louie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Louie is awesome, and it's okay, Mom. You'll catch up to Louie soon. Do you compete professionally in agility? Do you?
Not professionally, but yes, I do compete.
You do?
Yes, I do compete with my dog.
Okay, good. And are they considered really good?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, you can brag. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead, brag.
Booster's pretty good.
Yeah.
We learned agility together, Booster and I.
Well, I know that one of the things that your dogs are particularly awesome at is another sport, and it seems like it would be easy for the parent to learn how to do these things, but it's also very hard, and that is disc or frisbee. And there's actually training classes for disc or frisbee, because I still have a hard time throwing a frisbee to a person. But, you know, you watch the frisbee as you throw it. Okay, and yes, I'm in the studio and I'm pretending I'm throwing it right now. It's okay. And you throw it, and the dog has to know geometry, and it has to know physics of air and all that. And it was watching, and it knows exactly when to jump for it. Let's talk about disc and frisbee. It's a beautiful sport.
It is. It's a lot of fun. My biggest thing with disc is safety, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I don't start my dogs with a disc in the air until they're about a year and a half old.
And why is that?
For their joints. I like their growth plates to be closed and them to be sound physically before I throw the disc in the air and have them do any sort of jumping off of me or jumping in the air for the disc.
So what would you do if you were going to be embarking, ha-ha, pun intended, if you were going to be embarking on the sport of disc or frisbee with the dog who is before a year and a half old? How would you get them involved?
I get them involved by doing what's called a roller, where you're rolling the disc on its edge, and the dog is learning to track it. It's learning to turn its head. It's learning how to bite the disc.
Mm-hmm.
You work with multiple discs. So it's equally as important as them taking and going to get the disc, letting it go.
Mm-hmm.
It's the next step. You want them to drop the disc so you can throw the next disc.
Ah.
So we teach the drop off of a roller. And I also do takes out of my hand. So the disc is now horizontal to the ground.
As if it would be,
if
it's going in their mouth?
Yeah,
uh-huh.
As if it would be in the air.
Mm-hmm.
So they take it out of both hands, because I like to deliver the disc with both hands. And I teach them the tricks. Roll over, spin, twist.
So it's like muscle memory for the dog, for what it will be doing when it has to go after it. Everything but the leap.
Yeah.
Okay. And I know that when I throw up, my dog has a great frisbee. I tried using the hard plastic frisbees. She did not like that because it hit her in the face once and she shied from it. So I tried the floppy fabric ones and that didn't have enough stability. But I've now got everybody who listens to Fervently Speaking on a regular basis knows that I love Westpaw, and they've got a line of Zogoflex, which is it's like a rubbery material, and it's totally chew-proof, and so she loves it. And I do rollers with her, and she takes it, and every once in a while she'll chew on it, but that seems to be the one that works best for her. Is there one particular best type of frisbee or disc that somebody should use for their dog?
If you're going to compete, I would use a disc dog style disc.
Is it different than a frisbee I'd buy for 99 cents at, say, PetSmart?
Yes, it's mm-hmm. completely different. The 99 cents PetSmart discs are like a hard plastic,
right?
And they crack,
oh.
And that can hurt their gums, their tongue, their lips, stuff like that. So I don't usually recommend those for any sort of flying disc
mm-hmm.
to do with the dog. For people, it's great to throw them back and forth,
right?
But not for the dogs. You can't compete with a floppy disc, so I usually try to get the dogs off of the floppy disc fairly quickly. You know, you had mentioned that Happy had got bonked in the face with it and with the hard disc, and she didn't like it, which is another reason why, even if I get an adult rescue dog that I do disc with, I do rollers for months
mm-hmm.
with that adult dog.
Do all dogs take to disc or frisbee, or do they have to have, like, how can you assess if your dog's got the drive or ability to do it? Is there a way?
If your dog has a good retrieve, even for a ball, you can usually transition them over to a disc fairly easily.
Okay.
He would need a good retrieve on your dog when they go and chase something and bring it back.
Okay. All right. So that's good to know there. And that's especially good for probably why your border collie gets along, your border collies do well. You've even started using your whippets. They've been doing disc as well.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. So any breed can do it. The 125-pound St. Bernard might have a hard time getting hang time in the air.
Yeah.
And the pug would probably just wait for it to fall into its mouth.
Right.
Right. But mostly any dog, mixed breed or pedigree, could do it.
They can, yes.
And from a bonding experience, it's great. It's a great outdoor sport because I know agility can be done indoor, outdoor, depending upon what's going on. But a lot of the discs that I've seen are usually, because you need the space, outdoor, so fresh air, bonding, stop and smell the flowers and all that sort of good stuff.
Yes, it's probably one of the most favorite things I do when I go to the park with my dogs, just to play disc with them.
Yeah, it just seemed like a whole lot of fun. By the way, I saw you, I don't know if you knew that I was in the audience, but you did a disc demonstration at America West Arena during the Phoenix Mercury Dog Days of Summer.
Yeah.
And I saw you performing with your dogs, and I found it amazing that with thousands of people around them, the sole focus was on you and that disc and the fun that they had. You even looked like you were having fun, by the way.
I was having a good time.
You looked a little more nervous than the dogs, though. So, yeah, so excellent. I mean, seriously, love the disc, and that is something I'm going to have to be moving Happy up. She's going to be 2 years old next month, so her growth plate should be there. She's still small, but she's as growth plated as she's going to get, I guess.
Yeah, little dogs can play disc also.
Cool. So she's going to be learning how to disc. I have seen something that kind of looks like a relay race for dogs. And fly ball, is that what it's called?
Fly ball, yeah.
Fly ball, yeah. I tried to have my dog do it, but there was too much noise because these dogs, they go apoplexy, screaming and yelling for the ball. Let's talk about fly ball. I haven't seen a lot of places that give this as a course, but who is this primed for?
Fly ball is really primed for dogs that have little self-control. Little self-control. Just the crazy, kind of off-the-wall, adrenaline-filled dogs.
Okay, Jack Russells.
Jack Russells are great at it.
Yeah?
Well, the focus sometimes in a Jack is hard, but yeah, okay. They're pretty good.
Okay, so explain fly ball.
Fly ball, as you say, is a I call it a drag race for the dogs.
The dogs are not dressed in drag. They're just going down a course fast.
Going down a course fast.
Mm-hmm.
It's a relay race. They do four jumps. They hit a box and do a box turn. You want a safe box turn. Hit the box, come off the box with the ball, and bring it back, and the fastest team wins.
And how many dogs on a team?
Four dogs on a team.
Okay, four dogs on a team. Now, is fly ball as popular as disc or agility here in the United States? Or
I think fly ball is becoming more well-known.
Yeah, I don't see it very much except like at pet expos and things like that.
Yeah.
And it's really something because they run over the four jumps, they hit the ball, and the ball goes bam and pops into their mouth. So not only do they have to hit the box, they have to catch the ball, turn themselves around, jump over the same four, and just as the dog is getting to the last jump on the return, the next one is released.
Yes.
This is a fast sport.
It's very fast.
So from an owner perspective, okay, what's our role in this sport of fly ball for our dogs? What do we do? I'm not running with the dog.
No, we don't do much. It's really all about the dog. It's okay. Not really about the people. I hold my dog, and my responsibility is to make sure that he gets as close to the pack, nose to nose with that dog at the start finish, as I can. And otherwise, that's all I do. Is I just hold him in line, let him go, and he goes down, he does his job, he comes back, and I catch him.
And you catch the dog so he doesn't keep running.
I catch the dog so he doesn't keep
running. They still have the ball in their mouth, right?
They should hopefully have the ball in their mouth.
Do you get points taken off if you knock over a jump or you drop the ball?
Knocking over a jump doesn't get you any points taken off. If you drop a ball, you have to rerun your dog.
Oh, really?
Okay. So they have to carry the ball over the start finish line.
Okay. All right. Well, again, an amazing thing. I recommend people look up fly ball and disc and agility on Google. There's probably plenty of videos out there. Watch Animal Planet or Discovery Planet. I mean, try to check those out. And there are a whole lot of other sports that we can talk about, including dock diving, which was basically, it's like, it's dock diving. Dogs jump off of a pier. It's one of those things where you have to have a big pool. I know that there's training classes for that. There's something called nose work, which is kind of like a scent and track type of a...
It's a scent work, kind of along the lines of detection training, except for you're training natural oils,
mm-hmm.
clove, anise, and birch.
Oh, really?
Yep, you're just scenting them to that instead of the illegal substances or the explosive substances.
So if a dog is a hound, they'd probably do very well with it.
Yeah, hounds do well.
What about brachycephalic dogs like that have the flat faces? Can they do that work?
They can. It just takes them a little bit longer, and you have to help them with search patterns to help them a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, a pug can smell a treat from a mile away.
That's true.
Just as a German Shepherd.
That is absolutely true. And, of course, there are other sports as well, but I'd like to move the topic over because if you don't have as much activity in you as your dog needs for these sports, there's another type of training that I know that I've been involved with in the past, and it's a therapy dog training where you can actually bring your dog to hospitals, nursing homes, children's homes, things like that, and not every dog can do it. So let's talk about that because I know you have a great background in therapy dog training. This is not service dog training that I'm talking about, by the way, to the listeners. This is not a dog who hears for you or a seeing eye dog. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about therapy dog training. Wendy, let's talk about that. What does a dog and its parent need to do in order to be able to become a therapy dog team?
Well, I think one of the biggest misconceptions with therapy dog training is they have a nice dog that they think would be a good therapy dog. Maybe it's a golden who loves to greet everybody and put his paws up on everybody and jump and kiss and love on everybody. And that's not necessarily true. You want your dog to be social, but you also want your dog to be under control. So I see nice dogs that come in all the time. So nice, and is they're letting their dog jump on me and scratch me and lick me from head to toe. You know, that's probably not appropriate. They're going to need to put a whole lot of self-control. Because when you take them into these environments, hospitals and nursing homes and stuff, people just want a calm dog to put their hands on.
Right.
Not necessarily be licked and pawed and
right.
like that.
Right. I agree with you on that. The whole concept of therapy, of becoming a therapy dog, and that's a misnomer because it's not therapy dog, it's a team. And you and your dog need to be approved in order to go into these environments and help people through illnesses, long-term and short-term, and whatever the issues are. There's an accreditation society called the Delta Society and also Therapy Dog International, and they actually have evaluators who will say if your dog and you can work together as a team in order to be able to do these things. Because one of the what are there, 10 or 12 steps that need to be passed? It's actually the canine good citizen model, isn't it?
It's the beginning part of the Delta test specifically is the first, the canine good citizen test.
Right, which means if your dog has to do basic behavioral training with the sit-down stays, maybe a leave-it, there are things like that, a dog has to accept somebody coming over and hugging it and have it not... you know, freak out or snap or something like that, or maybe have somebody brush it. There's a lot of different things, including one of the tests is they have a lot of loud screaming and yelling going on, as might be the case
mm-hmm.
in a hospital. Well, your dog is allowed to not want to be involved with it, and that's absolutely fine, but what the evaluator is looking for is for you to be able to reassure your dog and make him or her feel okay despite the fact that something unsettling is happening.
Yes.
That's a true bonding experience.
Yeah, and that's a big part of the test is the people part of it
mm-hmm.
and how you deal with your dog.
Right, right. And so when you do therapy dog training so that a dog can become part of a therapy dog team with you, what would you actually be teaching them? What would a course be for that?
Well, I teach them the basics. And most of what I do is teach people, and just as you say, you know, teaching them, you know, help the dog through it. If you know, I come up with my walker and the dog seems a little bit nervous and the person just stands there or maybe even corrects their dog for getting up from their position because they're nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And so we talk a lot about that, the relationship that you have with your dog.
Right.
So that's
right.
A huge, I mean, that's probably most of what I teach them because a lot of people come in with the basics.
Right.
Down.
And I know with therapy dog training, there are a few rules that Delta or TDI, Therapy Dog International, have, and it has to do with the age of the dog and how long you've owned the dog, et cetera. And so you're going to want to take a look at those. It's deltasociety.org, or look up Therapy Dog International. And if you think that this is something that you and your pet would like to take a shot at in 2012, it's not difficult, but it just requires consistency and a commitment on your part to go to these institutions or these homes to visit on a regular basis, because you have to be able to prove that in an outside environment, not just in the training, but in an outside environment, that your dog and you can interact together. And I know that one of my previous golden retrievers and I, her name was Ariel, she was a certified Delta dog with me as a team, and we worked for both Gabriel's Angels and for another organization. And I do not like hospitals. I do not do well in hospitals. Ariel could have done anything, but I do not like being around hospitals. So we would go to what I call non-traditional places, like Alzheimer's facilities, where these people, they may not talk at all to anyone, but the second they put their hand on the fur of a friendly, calm dog, you see in their eyes something is being sparked. And I can't tell you how great it feels as the owner of that dog and as a human being to make a difference in somebody who ordinarily has absolutely no real contact with what's happening in the world. Likewise, we went to a home for what they call the bad kids, the other side of the track kids. You know, they were thrown out of regular high school. And we went, and these kids were not bad when my dog was there, when I was there, because all of their nurturing came out, all of their desire, where they may not get along with humans, they got along great with the dog. So, again, it was like therapy for them. And we also went to a school for the deaf, where children were being encouraged to speak rather than use sign language. And as a result, they would want Ariel, to sit. And so they'd try to get her to sit with their hands. And I was, in the meantime, saying, don't do it, Ariel, don't do it, Ariel. But if they said sit in any, or at least made any noise at all, and Ariel sat, it encouraged the kids to continue to speak, to use their voices. And so there's so much good that you can do to train your dog and then go and have this be an event, you know, a continuing basis where you and your dog are making a difference in the world. Do you do any therapy dog work, Wendy?
I personally don't, just because of time, mm-hmm. the time that I have available. But I think it's a great thing. I love training the therapy dogs. I like putting the therapy dog teams out there so they can go in and make a difference, like you say.
Yeah.
It's an awesome experience for everybody.
Yeah, it's fabulous. One more thing I wanted to talk about, and I told you I was going to write this down. It's about just breeds of dogs and their tendencies for being what I think parents consider to be, quote, bad. Like, they bark all the time. They bark, they bark, they bark. They don't stop nipping at my heels. There's a difference between an untrained dog and a dog that is actually exhibiting its heritage, its ancestry, like a cattle dog would nip at heels, or a German Shepherd might bark because it's been bred throughout centuries to be protective. What I want to try to get across, and what I'd like your insight and your sage advice about, is the difference between a dog that is bad and what can be overcome through good, consistent training and bonding. So help us with that.
Well, training definitely helps with anything. You can train a cattle dog not to nip at your heels, same as you can teach a border collie not to circle you.
You can do that.
And you can, and it's very difficult, but you can teach a Jack Russell not to dig.
Oh, that, no, not, now you see, now your credibility is gone, Wendy. You can teach Jack Russell not to dig.
You can. It's very difficult. It takes a tremendous amount of time and willpower on the owner's part. But you can. But you're right. The biggest thing that plays into any sort of dog training is genetics and what they were, you know, originally bred to do.
Right, right. And so when you're getting a dog into your home, it's really important that, of course, mixed breeds are a little different. You never quite know everything that's in a mixed breed. But research the type of breeds that fit your lifestyle and your tolerance levels before bringing them in. And don't be upset with them if they're exhibiting behavioral traits that are just within them. If you've got the patience to work them out of them, that's great. My suggestion is find a type of training that brings out the best in that trait. If you've got a sniffer, let's go for tracking. If you've got a dog that loves to run, let's go for agility or fly ball. If you've got a golden retriever who, you know, just likes to lean on you, let's go for therapy dogs, perhaps. Let's look at what our dogs have and make sure that we're bringing out the best in them, not trying to get rid of those things that that's just who they are, you know?
Right.
So thank you. I was hoping that is what you were going to say. Wendy Faircloth has been our special guest today on Fervently Speaking, and she is the director of training at Paws Canine Academy. And you've got a very special event coming up that kind of builds on what we've been talking about, don't you?
I do. On January 7th.
That's a Saturday, right?
That's a Saturday.
Saturday, January 7th.
From noon to 3, we're going to have this kind of like an open house where you can come in. And we've kind of dubbed it a big buffet of dog training.
All you can train buffet.
That's it.
Okay.
Right.
And so what's going to happen there?
We are going to be doing demos, and you can check stuff out. We're going to have an agility where you can try your dog in agility. We'll show a little bit of nose work. We have a class called Hollywood Dogs. That's another thing that that my dogs do is potentially doing commercials or little photo shoots or whatever.
Yeah, we'll have another show about that because I'm going to be bragging myself on that. But what you're going to be doing is giving demos and opportunities to speak with people, meet them and their dogs, let them try different types of training to see what they like, what their dog likes. Maybe show them some trick training and behavioral things, give them little tips and tricks. That's going to be at the Villa La Paz Dog Training Academy. The address is 10630 North 32nd Street in Phoenix, Arizona. It's the northwest corner of 32nd Street in Shea. And it's going to be on Saturday, January 7th, between 12 and 3. Free admission?
Free admission.
I understand you may be giving away some gift certificates for free training as well?
Yes.
Awesome. Bring your dogs on a leash. Make sure they're up to date on their shots. That's something that we would like you to do. Again, for safety, come on down and meet Wendy, who, as you can tell, she's a wealth of information. She's got the patience of a saint when it comes to dogs. People, not so much.
Right.
Okay, but and she will absolutely love with her staff to be able to show and tell how to make 2012 the best possible year for you and your dog bonding through training. Correct?
Yes.
Awesome. Wendy Faircloth, thank you so much for being here. If anybody wants more information about how to get training through you or anything else, you have a website you can tell us about?
Yes. It's villalapaz.com and go into services under training.
Okay, that's great. And the phone number over at the training center is?
602-442-7833.
And that's extension?
Extension number 3 for the training center.
Excellent. Do you always pick up the phone, or are you sometimes...
I don't always pick up the phone. A lot of times I'm in class.
Or we have the teacher, pick up the phone, 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 phone. Anyway, Wendy, you've been great. Thank you so much for being here. And you've been listening to the last Fervently Speaking of 2011. This is the top dog, Eileen Proctor, America's Canine Connections Coach, and the voice of Pet Rescue. We're looking forward to having a great 2012. Our first show will be on January 11th, again, Wednesday, hump day. And if there's anything that you would like to chat with me about, feel free to email me at topdog@fervently speaking, F-U-R,
fervently speaking.com, and I will get back to you any topics that you'd like covered on the show. But until then, I hope you've had a wonderful 2011. I'm looking forward to a fabulous 2012. Give your fur kids a kiss from the top dog, and remember, adoption is the best option. Take care now.
You've been listening to Fervently Speaking with your host, Top Dog Eileen Proctor. To find out more about today's topic or to suggest one for a future show, email topdog@fervently speaking.com. That's topdog@fervently speaking.com. And be sure to tune in every second and fourth Wednesday of the month for another fun and fur-filled episode right here on the Boomer and the Babe Network on Blog Talk Radio. Fervently Speaking is a production of Boomer and the Babe Incorporated. Contact them at boomerandthebabe.com.